3, verses 1 through 15. Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian. He led his flock beyond the wilderness and came to Mount Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of a bush. He looked, and the bush was blazing, yet it was not consumed. Then Moses said, "I must turn aside and look at this great sight and see why the bush is not burned up." When the Lord saw that he had turned aside to see, God called to him out of the bush, "Moses, Moses." And he said, "Here I am." Then he said, "Come no closer. Remove the sandals from your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground." He said further, "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. Then the Lord said, "I have observed the misery of my people who are in Egypt. I have heard their cry on account of their taskmasters. Indeed, I know their sufferings, and I have come down to deliver them from the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land to a good and spacious land, to a land flowing with milk and honey, to the country of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hevites, and the Jebusites. The cry of the Israelites has now come to me. I have also seen how the Egyptians oppress them. Now go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt." But Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" And he said, "I will be with you, and this shall be the sign for you that it is I who sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall serve God on this mountain." But Moses said to God, "If I come to the Israelites and say to them, 'The God of your ancestors has sent me to you,' and they ask me, 'What is his name?' what shall I say to them?" God said to Moses, "I am who I am." He said further, "Thus you shall say to the Israelites, 'I am has sent me to you.'" God also said to Moses, "Thus you shall say to the Israelites, 'The Lord, the God of your ancestors, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever, and this is my title for all generations.'" The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. So for those of you who are young, what do you imagine yourself doing at 80 or 90? How do you see your life unfolding? And if you're in the Middle Ages, 40, 50, 60s, even beyond that, somewhat in the 70s, how do you see your life going at 80 or 90, now that you're getting a little closer there chronologically? What do you imagine your life will be like at 80 or 90? And if you are 80 or 90, what did you imagine your life would be like at that age when you were much younger? Now, in the narrative, Moses lives to be 120 years old, 40 years as a prince of Egypt, another 40 years as a shepherd in Midian, and then a third 40 years bringing the Israelites out of Egypt and leading them through their wilderness journey. Now, a lot of this is probably symbolic. 40 is one of the Bible's favorite numbers, and this is 40 times 3, Moses living to be 120. And whether we think that Moses is literally 80 years old at this moment that he encounters God in the burning bush or not, the story wants us to believe that Moses is an old man, that he is an old man when God confronts him in the burning bush. So is this how you imagined your life at 80? And for those of you who are in your 80s or 90s, I appreciate your patience with a 56-year-old preacher asking you these questions. It could be worse. I could be a 26-year-old preacher asking you these questions. But it's really telling, and our friend John Fisher shared with me and gave me permission to share that over the course of his life, he was privileged to have three different careers. In the Navy, 30-plus years as a consultant, and then finally as a coach and teacher. And when he was young, the career that he envisioned for himself was as a teacher and a coach. And he'll tell you that he had fulfilling careers in the Navy and as a consultant, and I know if you ask him, he'll share more with you about that. But I'm very curious if some of your lives have had a similar arc, where maybe quite by surprise you are doing the thing at 80 or 90 that you imagined yourself doing when you were quite younger. Or maybe it's quite different. I don't know. And it might also seem that when God calls Moses in the burning bush, that it's a very abrupt break with what has come before. He grew up in Egypt. He killed an Egyptian because the Egyptian was abusing a Hebrew. He found out that people knew. He fled. He ended up in Midian. He married, had a family, was a shepherd for 40 years, a quiet nomadic life as a shepherd. And then God appears in the burning bush and upends his life. Now, all of a sudden, he's called to be a great liberator at the age of 80. And he is to go to Pharaoh and demand that Pharaoh let the people go, and then he will lead the people for the next 40 years. And it may seem like a sharp, abrupt break, but it's actually not quite as abrupt as it seems. Because even if we do get a new, unexpected calling at the age of 80, even then, it likely resonates with other chapters in our lives, that there was something preparing us for that moment. Look at Moses. For 40 years, he was in the Egyptian court. So who would really be better qualified to talk to Pharaoh? Even in spite of Moses' protestations, Moses seems very well equipped to talk to Pharaoh, having spent 40 years as a prince of Egypt. And who is better equipped to lead the people through the wilderness, through that very, very harsh climate? Well, Moses has spent the last 40 years caring for sheep in a very unforgiving terrain and climate. And so Moses really is well prepared for this brand new calling at the age of 80. And if a new calling comes sooner than that, at 60 or 40 or 15, very likely there are things in our lives that have prepared us for that moment. The singer-songwriter Sean Mullins spent many years on the road, playing in very small gigs, opening for acts that were opening acts for yet other opening acts, working very, very hard. And then finally he had a hit with his song Lullaby, and he was charting. And then he finds himself on the Jay Leno show, and Jay Leno is interviewing him. And Jay Leno says, "Wow, you came out of nowhere." And then Sean Mullins says, "Yeah, I guess after 10 years on the road, I'm an overnight success." And Jay Leno was kind of taken aback by his response. But like Sean was quick to point out that this American myth that, you know, greatness comes out of nowhere or just suddenly appears on the stage is just that, it's a myth. Because chances are there's a lot of hard work that's preceded that, or tough experiences that have preceded that. And so even when a calling might appear new or out of the blue, it really does resonate with our earlier callings in life. And the other thing about discerning a calling late in life, the thing that I think is most needed, is curiosity. God doesn't speak to Moses right away. Instead, there's a little pyrotechnic trick. But Moses is curious. "I must go and investigate why this bush is burning but is not consumed." And only when Moses expresses that curiosity does God then give Moses this call. I remember many years ago listening to an interview with the writer and novelist A.S. Byatt. And I think this was with Terry Gross on NPR. But A.S. Byatt said that curiosity itself is an amazingly powerful life force. It's an amazingly powerful motivator to live as long a life as we can so that we can see how things unfold because we're curious. And I would argue that for the spiritual life, curiosity is even more important. The way to discover a new call at 80 or at any time in our life is to be curious. To be curious about the new thing that God is doing in our family or in our church or in our community or even on the world stage. Curiosity is the key to discerning new calls. And if we think of the question as, you know, what are you called to do? What will you do with the rest of your life? Or even that famous last line in the Mary Oliver poem, what will you do with your one wild and precious life? Those can be daunting questions. What we might ask instead is simply, what's next? What is the next thing? And if you're busy taking care of children or aging parents, or you are already immersed in very important work that takes long hours, then the chances are that you have been called to that very thing. But if there is something tugging at you, if you catch a glimpse of a burning bush and it arouses your curiosity, I believe that the invitation is to pay attention to that and to see what might be next. When my mother had to give up driving and then later move into an assisted living facility, she went out of her way to volunteer for different clubs or projects where she could call people up on the phone. And this was back in the day when everyone had a landline. It was something that she could still do. And she was the most extroverted in our nuclear family, and so that she loved having this chance to call people up on the phone. And so it was that what's next. It was that what's next calling for the next chapter in her life. And so the question for us this morning is what's next? Where do we feel a tug? Where do we feel an affirmation that we're already doing the things that we're called to do? And where do we feel the tug that there might yet be a new opportunity to help someone that God has placed in our path, or simply to share our story and experiences? What's next? What's next? What's next? All glory and praise be to our God. Amen.